Hello, Neil.
Yes.
I'm parked behind your car.
Oh, good man. Okay. Right. I'm just 100 yards or so away.
Okie doke.
So I'll just come and find you.
Right. We're not trespassing, are we, Neil?
No, I've got permission.
All right. Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. See you in a bit. Good afternoon. Okay. Sorry I'm late.
It's right, nice to see you.
You too.
So you've got all you need?
Yes, I do.
Let me show you around.
Brilliant.
And then I'll
keep
this
rolling. Yeah, it's never a still day up here, although I imagine you've experienced the odd still day up here, have you?
Oh, this spring we've had some magical days. And often it's the early morning and the evenings when the wind's just that little bit quieter.
Right.
When you get to see it at its best. The main lagoon goes completely calm and you get the reflection of the blue sky and all the colours around it.
Oh wow, yeah.
It's quite a treat. So think of this as the pointer there.
Right.
And then we're going to call our reserve something like the Manx BirdLife Pointer Bear Reserve, something like that.
Right.
Just to make it distinguishable.
So that's what it's all about?
Yeah.
Your very own reserve.
This is where I am and I'm not wearing a suit.
Yeah, brilliant.
What you have in front of you is the quarrying area that Island Aggregates have been extracting the commercial aggregates from. And this first part we're looking at is now exhausted of its commercial aggregates and it's been handed over to Manx BirdLife as part of a lease to manage it for nature. And already, you know, what was bare gravel, bare sand, you can start to see nature doing what nature does best and taking it back over again. And this summer we've had carpets of flowers, butterflies and insects. I'll take you down to see some very special dragonflies as well.
Oh, fabulous.
But it's really starting to come into its own as a nature reserve.
And of course, with all those aspects of nature returning, like you say, the insects particularly, that inevitably brings the birds back.
Yeah, it's all about getting the ecological system working from the very smallest animals at the lowest end of the food chain all the way up to the top end of the food chain, and most birds sit towards the top end of that food chain. So if the ecosystem is healthy and you've got lots of insects, lots of invertebrates and other things going on, then it means the bird populations can start to establish themselves as well. There are new things being discovered here. Already there have been 178 different species of bird recorded around the reserve, and that's over half all the bird species ever recorded in the whole of the Isle of Man, which as a single site total, that's fantastic. And there are more birds being added to that list every year. On your way down the shingle bank.
So when did you identify this as a plot that could be adequate for a nature reserve?
Oh, well, the credit goes to Chris Sharp, who 20 years ago now had the first conversations about the potential for this area after the quarrying had finished. And there was a long period of negotiations with the lease and with different people coming into the owning company in Ireland. It just took a long time for those negotiations to get to a point where we could sign the lease. The local staff here at Island Aggregates have been fantastic all the way through supporting those negotiations. And it was fantastic that just before Christmas this year, we finally got that lease signed after 20 years. And we can really now start to put the effort into doing the landscaping and putting a little bit of infrastructure in place to allow the wildlife to be at its best, but also get people in here to enjoy it.
And obviously for someone who spends most of his days bird watching,
I wish.
Well, this area, this section, if you like, of the Isle of Man is so precious for birds, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. For a whole bunch of reasons, the whole North Ayres coastline is a fantastic ecosystem for both breeding and wintering birds. But being at the northerly point of the island, it's also right on the migration flyway. The Isle of Man as a whole sits on the northwestern European migration flyway. And so we have birds coming through here which have spent the summers in Iceland, Greenland, perhaps as close as Scotland, and then as far away as Canada even. And they'll use the north of the island either as a wintering destination or as a waymarker on their way further south to spend the winter, perhaps in Wales, Ireland, perhaps even in continental Europe. So it has an importance all year round at all stages of birds' lives.
So a refuge for bird travellers, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, birds are famous for their migrations, but of course we have insects here which migrate as well. So whether it's butterflies or dragonflies, there's a whole host of animals which use this as a migrational stop, but likewise use it as a breeding ground and indeed a wintering ground. And because you've got this open landscape with a lot of natural habitat, and now with the quarry here starting to be carpeted by nature again, and you've got the introduction of the freshwater lagoons, which are a unique habitat in the context of the island. There's just so much habitat. There's a mosaic of habitats here for the wildlife to get stuck into. See, just low over the water. That's an emperor dragonfly. It's, I think, the largest of the British dragonflies.
Right.
And they are very rare in the Isle of Man. And we think probably they're a bit of a fixture here now. They've taken to these water areas that we have. And when you're up close, you can hear the rustling of their wings. And they're...
And your ringtone.
And my ringtone. Come back to this in a minute.
So just give us a picture then. So we're talking about 20 years ago. This was very much an industrial landscape, rather barren in terms of nature. And as you've said quite rightly, the nature has slowly sort of just reclaimed over time. I suppose you're talking about the landscaping aspect of it now. What is that about? Is that literally just sort of honing nature here, or not really doing so much, because as you've already said, it's doing its work by itself?
Well, I think the art is to do the minimal amount of work and intervention for the maximum return. The Point of Ayre many years ago was seen as a bit of an outlying remote area, and that's why the landfills were put here. There wasn't seen to be much else use for the land. But there's important habitat in terms of the natural Gallic heath which occurs here. Now, a lot of that has been scraped off by the digging to create the landfill areas and indeed to create the quarrying. But now much of that has stopped. Nature is coming back. And particularly where we've got the quarrying, the level of the land is now lower than it used to be. So it's unlikely that the Gallic heath will ever return. And of course we don't have enough materials to fill back in the holes from which the aggregate has been extracted. But the great news is that those holes will fill up with water. You get these beautiful marginal pools and ponds
it's
that we
pure,
can
purely
see.
Natural.
Purely natural. There has been some effort put in to create the little shallows here, and we'll see a bit later some of the footpathing has already started to take shape. And in the main lagoon there are islands which have been created, but that's about it really. And the whole point is to let nature run the show. We just do that little bit that's required to allow people to come in and see the nature without overly disturbing it, but otherwise nature is doing everything that you see in front of you.
And this pond is its most gorgeous natural crescent moon shape. And we are being blessed with, I've counted about four of these blue emperor dragonflies.
Emperor dragonfly, that's right. Yes, they're top of the dragonfly system. They're the largest of the dragonflies. They are impressive beasts. And I don't think there are any, if many places on the island. There's one coming really close here to inspect us. We're in its territory, so it's trying to work out what we're doing here. Are we a threat to it? And if you stand still, and sometimes even if you hold out your finger, they'll come and settle on your finger and look you in the eyes. 105 acres or so is an area of special protection for birds. I think it's the only one in the Isle of Man that's been granted that particular status. And that does essentially mean that the area has to be managed in a way that is sympathetic to the best fortunes of the birds and other wildlife here. So it will stop us doing anything untoward.
Oh, that's stunning.
That destroys the ecology. So there's your first view.
Who'd have thought there was a lagoon on the Isle of Man?
That's,
it's almost too tropical a word to be entered in our sort of wildlife arena, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, you can come up here in the winter and it's anything but tropical, but on a day like this when you've got the sun shining and there's blue in the water, it's magical, and there are quiet spots where you can get completely out the wind and enjoy the insects. And then you have vistas like this where you've got the lagoons and the islands in front of you, and you can start to see the birds that are aggregating out the back. We're in that post-breeding part of the year where a lot of birds that have either bred here or around other parts of the island are bringing their families to use this area as a bit of a nursery, because they know it's protected, they know it's sheltered, and they know that there's much less disturbance here than elsewhere. So they feel very safe and secure bringing their young families here to do the rest of their growing up, to learn how to feed for themselves, for some of the birds how to hunt for themselves. And many of these birds will now stay here through until next year's breeding season, when they'll disperse again. Other birds will head south to Africa for the winter. And then other birds have yet to arrive, birds that will come in from places like Iceland and Greenland to spend the winter here. And other birds that throughout the autumn period that's in front of us will simply be using this as a refueling stop on their migration southwards.
On a personal level, obviously someone who's out here sort of surveying it and, you know, watching the progress of the sort of rewilding that's taking place naturally here, how does it make you feel then that you're eventually going to be sharing this and opening it up to the public?
Oh, fantastic. I think there's nothing more exhilarating than being able to share a love of the outdoors and wildlife with everybody around you. I think it's, you know, we talk about the current teenage generation. We label them Generation Anxious because there are lots of stresses in life, and coming to a place like this can completely distress you in a morning's or an afternoon's visit. And to have the opportunity to share that with people is wonderful. Of course, we have to make sure that in bringing people here and in allowing that open public access that I mentioned we were striving towards, we've got to make sure that we then don't disturb the birds, and the very thing we're bringing people here to look at is pushed away. So we have to design in walkways that provide views but don't disturb the birds. We have to provide places where the birds can be without disturbance from people, and that's all part of developing it as a nature reserve. But there's a lot to be seen here. Every month, every week brings something different because of this constant turnover of birds and other organisms that use this place. So any time of year there's always something to see here, and it's just great to be able to share it.
178 different species of bird recorded in this area. Obviously that's fantastic in terms of abundance, but of course earlier on in the year you released your seabird census, which shown that our biomass was down. How do you sort of juxtapose those two findings, I suppose, and do areas like this give you hope of restoration and perhaps a recovery, I guess?
Yeah, areas like this are steps on the way to recovery. There is no doubt that the big picture in terms of number of species and sheer numbers of birds, their populations, are on the downturn. That's the big picture. And it's going to be a huge fight, a huge change in the way society behaves before we get anywhere near to restoring that bigger picture to where it should be. But projects like this are really important milestones in trying to, first of all, bring that change about, but also bring people into realizing that that change needs to happen, because you can see that when you do have spaces like this where you have the right conditions and you carefully manage the intrusions into the wildlife, that wildlife can still thrive. So this area has had already a fantastic diversity of animals. It's enabling birds that might struggle to nest elsewhere to nest somewhere safe and raise their young. It's giving wintering birds, which are really under pressure at that time of year to find food in the short daylight hours and when there's not much food about, it gives them an undisturbed opportunity to go about their business. So yes, the big picture is diversity and abundance of birds is diminishing. This is one small thing. It's worthwhile and it's enduring that we can do to head back in the right direction.
Fabulous. Shall we carry on the tour? So this is very much exclusive access for a layman like myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is all part of the working quarry, and because we've got lots of hazards in the ground and it's not really suited for open public access yet, we just can't risk, and our insurance doesn't allow us to open the gates to the public. But that is very firmly the intention. That is what we will do. For now, it's just private groups, private individuals that we can supervise and show around, and then we can steer you clear of the hazards, and we can make sure that you don't inadvertently wander into the active part of the quarry where there are bulldozers and machineries. A lot of the challenge for us is to put boundaries, some gates in, make the footpaths clear so that everyone can understand where they can and can't go, and then that'll mitigate a lot of those risks. But you'll see in the ground here, there's a little piece here, and there are bigger pieces of metal in the ground, and we've picked a lot of those up, but some of them we can't actually pull out of the ground, so we're not quite sure what's attached at the end of them. There are some fairly significant chunks of metalwork in the ground here, so we had to get that all out first and make it safe. But imagine this is the old working quarry. There are lots of things here that have been left over. That's not the biggest of hazards, but there are pieces of metal where we're not too sure if they go a foot into the ground or there's a bulldozer on the end of them.
Yeah, right.
And if you can see the cormorants out there, maybe use my binoculars. Do you want me to hold you?
Yeah, fabulous.
Hold that. Have a look at the island and you'll see that...
Can I hear curlews as well?
Yes, you can.
Wow. So that's the biggest colony I've ever seen of cormorants. Wow.
And you see the big towers, twig towers?
Yeah.
That's the nests they've built. And every winter they get washed away, and every summer they rebuild them again.
That's marvellous. So they literally are on an island haven there, aren't
yes.
they?
And that gives them a bit of protection from predators, ground predators. We sincerely hope people don't swim out there.
Yeah.
And there's an uneasy relationship between the big gulls that you can see out there and the cormorants. They sort of each provide the other with a bit of protection. But the cormorants know that if they turn their back, the gulls will be in and have their eggs.
Right.
So it's a slightly uneasy relationship between them. But it seems to work. What you can hear calling now is a great black-backed gull. It's the biggest seagull in the world. And it's known in Manx as Dewan Mor, Big John.
Big John, I didn't know that.
But I would suspect they've got a youngster out of sight on the other side of the bank to us. And they're just slightly agitated that we might be going a bit close to the youngster. So we'll walk on and leave them in peace.
And then after that kind of hands-on, laborious sort of stuff, could this become a place of citizen science?
Oh, absolutely. We have a clear vision that this will become a centre of excellence. We want it to become a centre of excellence for nature conservation. We want it to be a centre of excellence for environmental education, and we also want it to be a centre of excellence for citizen science. And the really important thing about citizen science is that provides data on how well the reserve is developing. There are people who've got very passionate interests in different aspects of botany and zoology, and they'll each bring their interests and their skills with us. And so, for example, they can be doing monitoring studies to see how things evolve and change over time. And it's that citizen science which will tell us whether we're doing a good job or not. I remember as a youngster being shown a little worm, which is a totally obscure worm, but it's a salt marsh worm, and it's called Chaetopterus variopedatus. Now, I've never had any use for that name in my entire adult life, but it's stuck with me. And I think sometimes it's those little things which stick, and that can make such a difference. And when you've got birds like stock dove that's just flown over the hedge, that's a really rare bird in the Isle of Man.
Right.
But post-breeding, they gather here in 20 to 30, flocks of 20 to 30. And it's a sight you won't see anywhere else.
Is that it there?
There it goes. Well spotted. And you won't see that anywhere else on the Isle of Man.
Wow.
And so if you're here with a young person and you say, that's a stock dove, it's not a pigeon, it's a more shy, retiring woodland dove, and it's highly rare on the Isle of Man, there's a chance that in those group of children, with two or three of them, that's going to stick for life. They'll remember that. And we brought a group of young children here a few weekends ago to do some filming. And we took them around this area and we showed them this pond here, and there were frogs hopping around and they were all worried about treading on the frogs. So we all stood back and watched, and there were dragonflies, there were butterflies, there were these tadpoles in the water, and there were these frogs emerging out on the margins. And it was absolutely fabulous. And they had an absolute whale of a time, and I'm sure that will stick in their memory for a long, long time.
You mentioned that instinct, that almost that natural grasp of the preciousness of this place.
Yeah, you don't have to sell it. I think the challenge for us is to get as many people up here as we can to experience it for themselves. And the place does the selling. It's so different to the rest of the Isle of Man. The freshwater lagoon, for example, is a unique habitat here on the island.
As in sort of one of a kind.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So there's nowhere else on the island that has a freshwater lagoon like that. And then much of this open fresh water is unique because it's not highly acidic. Much of the water on the island, up in the uplands, for example, or in the reservoirs, is a fairly acidic water. So that creates a very distinctive ecosystem. This creates a very different ecosystem here. It's freshwater again, but it doesn't have that acidity from the heath in it. And the fact that we've got all these dragonflies around is testament to the fact that there are other insects around, because dragonflies eat other flies and other insects. So there's that whole community, that food chain starting to develop, which is supporting some of these higher predatory animals, and that's a really good sign. And we won't do it because we'll disturb stuff,
of course.
But if you were to sort of brush your hand across the top of all that rush and the other vegetation, you'd have damselflies drifting up. We've got common and blue-tailed damselfly here. And there's that dragon again. Yes, that's a nice big emperor dragonfly. And we've got sand martins flying around us here, a bit higher up. And they're all actively feeding on the insects that escape the emperor dragonflies and get higher up into the sky. And these sand martins typically will spend the winter around Central Africa, possibly Senegal, and then they come back to join us for the summer.
It's really serene around here, and as you mentioned that the uniqueness of the place, I'm really starting to understand that and appreciate that now, having only been here, been walking for about 20 minutes, and actually feeling that, gosh, this isn't a landscape I've experienced before on the Isle of Man. This is unique.
It is. There are arguments to say that perhaps the Gallic heath that was here before was important, and it's a shame that perhaps it's been scraped away in this area for the aggregates. But we're talking about decisions made 20 years or so ago, and once the quarrying has been done, it's just fantastic that you can allow nature to restore it into something which is different for the Isle of Man, but equally valuable. And you have some of the same organisms finding sanctuary here that were finding it tough elsewhere. But you've also got a whole community of new organisms moving in and adding to that diversity that we have here on the island.
And obviously, for someone like yourself, that's an incredibly exciting and heartening thing.
Well, I'm a botanist and a zoologist, but I'm afraid I've concentrated on the bird side, the ornithology side, for too many years now, and I've forgotten much of my botany. And it's been fantastic trying to relearn my flower names. And every time I come here, I'll see something different and I won't know what it was. So I grab a picture and I get home and I try and identify it. But every time I come here, I find something different, whether it's a fungus, a flower, an insect, or a bird. And there's a lot more to come yet, I'm sure.